1290 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. President Biden must fire the head of the Secret Service, Kim Cheadle, if she doesn't resign over the Trump rally shooting last weekend, says House Speaker Mike Johnson.
Director Cheadle has shown the world and said that she has different priorities. She needs to go.
Johnson on ABC's This Week, the Secret Service chief is scheduled to testify on Capitol Hill tomorrow. The FBI has recovered a drone that is believed to have been used by the gunman in the Trump shooting to scope out the site before the rally, says a law enforcement official. A powerful independent who caucuses with Democrats, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, says President Biden should drop out of the race.
It's just time for a new generation to come in that basically can start and let him do the job he intended to do to heal the country.
President Biden's mild COVID symptoms are improving, but he still does have a cough and a hoarse voice, says his doc. Mr. Biden's isolating at home in Delaware. This is ABC News. Chicago police looking for whoever walked up to a letter carrier on her rounds Friday. Octavia Redmond shot her several times and killed her, then drove off. Elise Foster, president of the local branch of the National Association of Letter Carriers.
I know her husband. He's a letter carrier, also assistant union steward at the station. She's just a great person.
Redmond was 48, a grandmother. Snapshots and abodes coming up this week, says ABC's Daria Albinger.
Summer is traditionally real estate season, and mortgage rates are falling, but they're still high enough to keep many would-be buyers on the sidelines. We're going to get two reads on the housing sector this week, starting with existing home sales on Tuesday and new home sales on Wednesday.
Saying he's quitting his job, New York Times restaurant critic Pete Wells. Reason? Constant eating the gig requires has led to obesity and other health problems. Restaurant food tends to have high levels of salt and saturated fat, says a study by Tufts University. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Wow, Wayne, that is a beautiful window.
It sure is, Jeff. It really tackles energy efficiency.
Sure has a nice slide.
It's one of the best screenplays I've ever seen.
They're so easy to close. I'd say it's a grand slam.
If you guys keep making those dad jokes, you're going to be a real pain in my neck.
Oh, that's a good one. Did you hear about this one? Five.
Get as low as $18 per window and $81 per patio door per month. Visit PellaWI.com today.
Certain restrictions apply on 7/31/2024.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103.
Yes.
Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Hundreds of people on death row have now been exonerated over the last 50 years, and many more have been executed, even though they're innocent. Here's Will Waukee.
It's being called a historic milestone. 200 people have been exonerated after being sentenced to death since 1973. The exonerees were wrongfully convicted because of misconduct from government officials or other factors, and then set free after being behind bars, sometimes for decades. Robin Marr with the Death Penalty Information Center says cases like this have been devastating, not just for individual families, but for the nation.
Communities really lose confidence in the integrity of the legal system and its ability to respond appropriately and keep them safe.
Half of the public now believes the U.S. unfairly applies the death penalty, according to the latest polling, but a majority of Americans still favor death sentences for those convicted of murder. Nationwide, Marr says far more than 200 people have likely been wrongfully convicted and sentenced to death, in part because of challenges with the legal appeal process.
Once someone is convicted and sent to prison, that burden then shifts to them to prove that they're innocent. And that's very difficult to do without a good lawyer. And it's also very difficult to do because of the operation of the law.
The Death Penalty Information Center says two-thirds of those exonerated have been people of color. President Joe Biden campaigned on abolishing the federal death penalty, but his administration has taken few steps to do so. I'm Will Waukee, West Virginia News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies, light northeast winds with highs in the upper 70s. Tonight, a few clouds around, lows near 60. On Monday, plentiful sunshine, temperatures will be warmer, light southeast winds and highs will reach the lower 80s. Right now, it's 73.
Crude and Dom.
Join the devil's advocates on Monday. We've got Congressman Mark Pocan. He'll tell us why he's advocating for Joe Biden to step down as the presidential candidate for the Dems.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Kripescast. Today, we got a fashion designer on the deal, a Midwest-born and bred fashion designer, Elena Velez. You've seen her designs in Taylor Swift videos. Celebrities have worn them. She's New York Fashion Week.
The real deal.
The real deal. It's pretty cool because, you know, a lot of people, when they think, oh, Midwest fashion, what does that even mean? Is that just like people in the Midwest wearing fashionable stuff 10 years after it was fashionable? And that might be true if you're talking about me. but Elena is on the cutting edge of this, and it's very cool to see someone from the Midwest step up. Her story, quick story. Elena, she's a Milwaukee native. She lives in New York City right now. She went to schools, Parsons School of Design, Central St. Martin's, and she is an award-winning fashion designer. She was named the 2022 Emerging Designer of the Year by the Council of Fashion Designers of America. She was recognized as part of Elle Magazine's 2023 Women of Impact, 2022 the Vogue Fashion Fund winner. She's been featured in Forbes magazine.
It goes on.
It goes on and on and on. Her mom was a Great Lakes ship captain. She drove ships all throughout Lake Michigan, based in Milwaukee. And everything from icebreakers to sort of those cruise ships, those booze cruise things. She was in the ship kind of at an early age, and that inspired her aesthetic. Kind of the Rust Belt cities of the Midwest inspired her sort of industrial aesthetic that has now made its way to celebrities like Colleen's favorite, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
What's music video is?
Fortnite with Post Malone.
Oh, yes. I forgot.
Yeah.
I clearly have seen that. And it's a wonderful music video, ladies and gentlemen. But I will say it was cool to have Elena on. And we discussed like what it would take to make Milwaukee kind of an epicenter for fashion. She seems to have some dreams for that and some ideas for that. So it's really cool. Anytime we can find someone just repping the Midwest in the top tier of their industry, it's very fun. And also, we're all about those deep teases here. We just might have Barron's Old Fashioned Brandy as a New York Fashion Week sponsor.
Yeah.
If she can give us a coupon on that deal.
Yep. If she can give you a coupon, and if we just got to work on your walk, I think.
Oh, yeah. We did a fake runway walk. I'm going to say it was fake because some didn't think it was that good. So, you know, it was, I was doing that for comedic purposes, Colleen. But anyway, that's all coming up on this podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here is my conversation with fashion designer and entrepreneur, Elena Velez.
Is this a decoration? Or are we cracking this?
You want some?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Oh, freaking A.
It's like 11:04, right?
Yeah.
Let's go.
All right. Are we recording?
Oh, we're recording.
You okay.
You record.
Now, how do you like your brandy?
Straight.
Oh, wow.
In a cup.
That is awesome. Tell me when.
This is a terrible exercise.
That's
good.
Keep going?
Yeah, a little bit. There we go.
I didn't know if you were.
Are you going to match my freak?
Oh, my God. God, we're going to see.
You're going to try.
We're going to see.
Do you know that reference, Charlie, or no? Don't hurt him. Somebody going to match my freak. If he had gone to Summerfest, he would know.
Cheers.
Cheers, Sante.
This is so much brandy.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's 90 proof. Get ready.
Oh.
Go for it.
Might be just a sipper. That's good. What do you think? How do we feel for brandy? How do we feel?
What's this is smooth.
Ooh. It's smooth.
See? This is smooth.
It is smooth.
You like it?
Yeah. This is like good, proper Stella's hooch.
Yeah.
This is easy. Don't even play with me. We can drink this whole bottle.
Okay.
Before noon.
Really?
Yeah. That's when the real podcast starts.
Oh, my God. Well, we got an hour, 45 minutes, folks, before the real questions get asked.
Hey.
Here.
That's Charlie's brandy.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it really?
Yeah.
You want to do a Fashion Week sponsorship?
Yeah. How much?
How many can you give me of these?
You tell me
just
a number.
Just the one.
Tell me a number.
What, I don't know.
What's a good
like,
number?
Let's do like 20 bottles.
Done.
Okay.
Done.
No, like bottles and models in New
bottles
York City.
Bottles and models. Oh, hell yeah.
He thinks I'm playing. I'm so serious. Let's go.
No, I'm not playing.
Let's go.
Get that I'm written down. Down.
We have New York Fashion Week. Put it on the Kripecast brand whiteboard. I saw that too.
Yeah, we'll do that.
We got a whiteboard down there?
Yeah, we do.
Damn. That's what I aspire to as an entrepreneur is to have no idea what's going on in the company.
Welcome.
Damn.
I feel like I just brought you here to just roast me for the whole time.
Oh, listen, I have notes.
I love it. They are loving
this. I gave the girl the bit.
That's good.
Let's
I
go.
Like that. All right, let's go. So you got... Mm-hmm. Why don't you just take me back from the beginning? When did it all begin? What was the first kind of inspiration?
Oh, God, I don't know. It's like it's hard for me to try and articulate my work. I'm not the best person to do that. I'm just like creating from what feels right and natural and exciting to me. And I think that I let other people dissect what those references are. But like I'm a Milwaukee girl, born and raised. My dad's Puerto Rican. He's a musician. My mom's a ship captain. On the Great Lakes. So that was like a very formative memory of mine. Yeah. So I guess the entire brand universe is kind of trying to quantify all of these different nostalgic memories that I have that I'm kind of interpreting and adding a little bit of my own personality to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like what you're doing, so you're bringing this sort of industrial feel of these Midwest cities that you got on those ships with your mom, mm-hmm. right? Like that was kind of, I don't know. I feel like sometimes like, did you feel as though that maybe that unique perspective was like not sort of like you look at these cities in decay a lot of times
mm-hmm.
and that's where your weakness, but in the weakness is the biggest strength.
Totally. Yeah. Well, the thing is that like I was doing a lot of traveling. I've always known that I wanted to be a fashion designer for some strange reason. It's always been like a compulsion towards this craft that I could never articulate when I was young. Always wanted to do fashion design, never quite sure if I wanted to be part of that economy and that industry.
Mm-hmm.
But as I started to travel for college, I went to school in Paris and London and New York, and I was starting to develop my own assertions as an artist and as a woman. And I just wasn't seeing myself represented in the way that I wanted out in the world. In these like very cosmopolitan creative coasts. So it really enabled me to kind of tap back into the story that resonated with me and what I wanted to be able to offer other people in the fashion space.
What is the fashion space like? What you weren't seeing? What was that? Like,
I guess like just the stories of like womanhood and femininity and class were just not resonating with me. Come on, you can do better than that. Let's go.
It went down the wrong pipe.
His own whiskey. You got to redact that.
His own brandy.
Went down the wrong pipe, guys. Yeah, it can go down the wrong pipe and that can be okay.
It's not wrong pipe.
I only have one brandy pipe. Listen, I don't know about you.
Let me chase out with some coffee.
He's chasing with Colectivo.
That's
damn.
It's the most basic anyway.
Yeah, but I guess I just wasn't seeing myself out in the world. And I was like, okay, I can't handle another like stuffy upper middle class, like delicate sensibility, bourgeois woman. Like, where's the Midwest? Like, where's that influence? Where is the type of woman that I see on the ships, in the factories, in, you know, all of these different like craftsmanship capacities, I guess. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
And would you say that your mom She's obviously a central figure in your business, mm-hmm. and we'll get to that in a moment. But would you say your mom was kind of like an early influence from a fashion
totally.
Perspective?
I think that's kind of a cliche, though, like that every is fashion it? Designer's like first like muse is always their mother, because obviously like that's a proximity that everyone has.
I didn't know that was a cliche.
Every famous gay fashion designer's like first Barbie doll was his mom. Right. Oh. And like it's always the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's just got like all of these different like soft and hard powers to her that I think make a really interesting paradoxical representation of womanhood and femininity in a way that just feels honest and cool.
Yeah. And tell us kind of like what she was a captain of.
Every boat in Milwaukee.
So did she do, she did cargo ships. Did she do
cargo tugs, breaking ice, like the booze cruises, the Edelweiss.
The Edelweiss.
Like if you were on the Edelweiss from like 1999 to like 2004, I was in the cockpit drinking a kitty cocktail and reading You for Filth. Like that is like, I was posted up on the Edelweiss. And then she also ran the Dennis Sullivan, which was so sick.
Wait. She did. That's
the huge like that pirate ship that's yes. off of the Discovery World.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, with the masts yep. and stuff.
Yeah.
She, what did she do on that?
She was the captain.
She was the captain on that. That's a whole other category.
Yeah.
Because you got to know how to, that's an actual sailboat, isn't it?
It's an actual sailboat, yeah.
Damn. That's wild.
When I was young, they used to put me in a harness and I would get to climb out on one of the masts and like unfurl like a jib sheet. It was sick. That thing gets speed. Like it's fast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can, because like that's, I have to imagine that's a whole other level of commanding.
It's insane.
Because if you say the wrong thing, I think the sail can capsize it pretty quick.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Probably not on a ship that big, but I like the idea of that better.
I want to sync it up there.
She's got so many good stories of like almost being arrested by like the FBI in the Caribbean for like being a pirate. She's so sick.
Your
crazy.
Mom was a pirate? Damn.
You're not going to hear that from me on the Charlie Barron's podcast. Okay. One thing about my mom. Like,
I had to dig into that. Mm-hmm. Where'd your mom learn how to sail and do all that?
Virgin Islands, in Milwaukee, like Michigan, really, for the most part.
That's really cool.
She did it all despite a man who told her that women shouldn't sail boats. Ooh. Like, that tracks.
That's badass. Yeah. That's badass. I see that. Did she ever do the ferry cruiser?
Which one's that?
It's where it takes your car from Milwaukee over to Michigan.
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay. The icebreaker, though.
Yeah.
Freaking cool.
I have like really cool memories of like drifting through these like very beautiful and bleak apocalyptic landscapes in the winter when I'm young.
Yeah.
Just me and her in these like very heavy metal machinery sorts of landscapes, just breaking ice. And it was crazy. It's such a cool childhood. And I'm an only child, so it was really just me and her growing up.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
That's super cool. And that just sort of bled. I mean, you were drawing, I read somewhere, mm-hmm. drawing in the boat as well. So that
probably.
Okay. that's what I, but is that like, do you remember like the first drawing you made where you're like, I want to push this into fashion, where you mm-hmm. get that initial thing for fashion?
Well, the thing is like I was always excited about collaging different proportions and shapes and colors on a female body. Like for some reason, like I liked to see a canvas as like a body, whether it's 360 in the round. That was exciting to me. I can't say that's just like a weird creative compulsion. But the moment that I knew that fashion was like a viable career path was like obviously in like 2006, 2007 when Project Runway hit and I finally had all of this language to articulate what it was that I loved.
Mm.
But I was doing so much before that in Wisconsin, like old heads remember like Fashion Ninja and Madame Chino, like all of these cool indie 2006, 2007, like just artists who were doing workshops out of their like basements or their River West, like shop fronts, just really cool, like underground DIY fashion scene. that I was coming up in as like an 11, 12 year old.
Oh, that's super
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea anything like that existed.
Milwaukee was so lit. We have to bring it back.
Yeah. Well, what's the scene like in Milwaukee right now? Like, do you know? Have you been out of it for so long?
I mean, there's not much going on here, but like I always see like barren land as like room for opportunity to grow. So I'm actually so excited about the possibility of what Milwaukee could be.
Yeah.
I really want to open like a manufacturing component of the brand that is situated in the Midwest, probably in Milwaukee, ideally. But just something that makes the brand entirely circular, vertical, offers like education and employment opportunities. And is just kind of as sexy as a back of house operation as the brand is front of house.
Mm-hmm.
Like the closest I could compare it to is like an LA or American Apparel,
mm-hmm.
where they made the system of creating the garment as exciting and cool as like the actual product.
Right. Yeah.
I want to do something like that for the Midwest.
So would you take like one of those, you go into like the Third Ward or you go into River West and you find there are like those big, anywhere along a river, actually, there's all these old industrial buildings
mm-hmm.
because that's where industry was along the river.
Yeah.
Could be cool with your mom with the boat and everything.
So
the connection.
Cool. Yeah.
Would you buy one of those buildings and sort of like,
well, here's the thing is that I wouldn't have to. Like, I've presented this idea to so many people who are so excited about what this could be.
Other people's money.
Other people's money. Yeah.
That's great. So, but that is that kind of in the works? Where are you at with that?
It's in the works. It's one of those things that is just requiring a part of my brain that I can't access as like a mother and a creative and somebody who's just like so inundated with like putting out fires.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, if this is going to happen, like I have to find other people who can help me flesh out like the business proposal.
Right.
But all the ingredients are there. It's just like, how am I going to build the cake?
Like, right. Right. Yeah. You need like a producer on it or so, or yeah. somebody to take your vision and just get the nuts and bolts
totally
together.
And everybody says that, like every creative is like, oh, I just want to be the visionary. I want to be the creative. I need to find somebody else who can do all the hard work. But like,
LOL,
LOL me, like.
You.
Damn.
Well, it's not like I don't pay, you know.
Yeah, true.
I don't pay. Sorry. I pay in clout.
No, I would be
No, you do a lot of the hard work, but I would say there's a lot of times where you're like, I can't get into the minutiae.
Yeah,
that's
I do.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I do say that.
I want that on a hat.
I can't get into the minutiae.
No.
Well, the more
you're away from it, I feel like the better it is.
Mentally?
Yeah.
But the more I give you, the more badass you get, you know?
So true.
It's just amazing. Yeah. See? Positive reinforcement. That should work for another week.
Sandwich, right? Cool.
But I'm super excited about that because I do feel like, you know, whenever we have creatives on here, whether it be a comedian or a filmmaker or, you know, in your case, and you guys live outside of the Midwest, it's like, what would it take to make Milwaukee a place where this could be like sort of an Austin for comedy and Nashville for mm-hmm. music? Could you do that here with
so
fashion?
And absolutely. In yeah.
It takes maybe one person to be sort of the epicenter of it and then others
yeah.
will follow.
And then there's kind of like a satellite constellation of people that are like drawn to that sort of force that's being generated, I guess. Like, look mm-hmm. at the music scene that was so prevalent here a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Like, there was really a moment where people were like, okay, Milwaukee's like a secondary, tertiary capital for music.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of this is coming out of the pandemic where we're starting to, like, try and understand what our new identity is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all of that is actually really productive for cities like Milwaukee, cities like Austin, cities that are like where people are congregating now, that they don't have to be static or physical in one location versus another and can really prioritize quality of life. So I don't know. This is the thing. It's like fashion's difficult because you can have a story and you can have an identity. You can have a visual universe, but it just has to align with the zeitgeist for it to be impactful. And there are some designers that just never make it because their story isn't relevant. It's not touching anyone. It's not like affecting anybody in any sort of meaningful way.
When did you realize your story was touching people?
I don't think I've ever been specifically aware of that. Like, I try really hard not to get too meta about what I do, because it kind of separates me from the proximity to the craft, which is what ultimately like carries the brand. But I think that there are a lot of different accessible touch points to the brand that resonate with all sorts of different people. Like, I'm a non-traditional Hispanic female founder from a creative capital, from like a city that is like totally not represented in the creative industry, is what I mean to say. So like that kind of resonates with people who want to see like the fashion art industry democratized in kind of a cool way. Like, why is it that the only creative people that get to impact the American creative identity are from New York or LA? Mm-hmm. And like, are those really the people that we need to be hearing from right now? Mm-hmm. And you know, I will say that, like, I think the last couple of political elections have really shown me that, like, oh, there needs to be a voice from the Midwest, because the polarization, the inability to fathom what the left and the right are thinking or living, just shows that there's no conversation in between these two polar opposites.
No.
And fashion and art, comedy, these are all really unique vehicles to get to bridge conversation and bring people together through just good storytelling and like human-centric philosophies.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that sort of polarization is partially in each side sees the other as evil. And then mm-hmm. all these artistic mediums are ways of bringing people together. And you do such a great job of bringing sort of the industrial feel into like almost like people might stereotypically think fashion is feminine and industrial is masculine. And you sort of bridge those in a very cool mm-hmm. way. And people have resonated with it. You've had Taylor Swift wear what was the first moment in doing this where you saw that there was a pop, I guess, of that this was wanted? Like, was it a first award, or was it Vogue reaching out, or mm-hmm. what was the moment where you're like, oh, okay, this is clicking?
I guess I still struggle with that.
Yeah.
Like, I never know if what I'm doing is working or not working. Like, it's very hard for me to gain the altitude that I need to be able to see myself from that perspective.
Wait, if Taylor Swift's wearing your stuff,
that to me feels like a coincidence.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
I
read that's like just me like having a lot of friends who are stylists. That's random.
That's so interesting. God dang. You can't even see that, huh?
That's the playing in traffic that is required to continue to get the wins.
I know what you're talking about, because I have a hard time. Do you not absorb your wins as much?
Never.
You just on to the next one.
You're like,
the next shoe's going to drop. This is all going to fall apart.
Yeah. Well,
that's so Midwest of you.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I've only expressed like 30% of what I really want to communicate with my work.
Yeah.
And I've struggled my entire life from not having the tools to be able to express myself, whether that be talent or skill or money or like actual verbal language. And it's always just been this like feeling of, oh, just bear with me. Just wait. I'll show you. Just wait. I'll show you. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm still feeling that like so urgently.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. Now let's talk about some of those things, because I think that this is a big part. Outside of creative, one of the big things is financing. And that's mm-hmm. as you bring in this bridging of two types of people. That's a big thing. A lot of the financing is tied up in who you know in New York or LA or whatever. How did you finance your company initially?
All of my money is Milwaukee based. Yeah. So all of my investment capital is generated from startup incubators in Milwaukee, which was really important to me and really cool to be able to say, like, this is a buy us for us fashion brand. And whether or not I spend more time in New York or Milwaukee is besides the point.
Right.
Like, this is something that people see value in. I worked with Generator, which is an amazing startup accelerator program. They've done a lot for like the creative industry in Milwaukee. I've worked with CSA Partners, which is like another amazing, you know, group of people that just really value building a culture in Milwaukee, which is amazing. So I did a lot with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And initially I read that your mom put up.
That's like deep lore. Like, that's not totally true. That's just something that the New York Times put out as kind of like a very incendiary kind of like a grab piece. I see. So that's not totally true. But it is true that my mom has put a lot on the line to help me, you know, exceed and excel in this industry. But she's seen me since I was seven. She's never, ever seen me doubt or question my trajectory. So if she really, truly believed that, like, she would want to help and support. And she does.
What's the larger thing that is to be said about financing in this industry? Like, can you do it without financing? Like, how can somebody out there who wants...
You can do it without financing, but it's going to take you twice the time.
Okay.
And this is the thing, is like, in a creative industry, you don't have time.
Right.
You have to be the first to claim an idea, to claim a creative real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. It's also a matter of like endurance as a founder. It's like, what I do in a year is so exhausting and takes such a physical, intellectual, spiritual toll on me that I need to get it done in 5 years because I don't have 10. I'm going to die.
Yeah.
So this needs to happen between this time and this time, or it's just not happening because A, the ramp is running out, and B, like, I'm going to spiritually collapse.
What do you mean the ramp's running out, though?
Well, it's always a ramp. Like, there are certain metrics and just very concrete factors that need to happen and need to be accounted for in a certain amount of time for something to either happen or not happen.
You're talking about someone to buy your whatever. Like,
a buyer. I'm talking about Fashion Week. I'm talking about being able to make your production timeline work.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
You know, all of these different sorts of like things, like managing your cash flow. That's a ramp. Like, I have 6 months to be able to execute on XYZ. And if I can't do that, or if I can't plug A into B, like, it's just not going to happen.
Because it's not obviously designing, you're creating these collections, which you then have to sell, and you're dealing with merchandise on hand.
That's the thing, is like, I'm not a fashion designer anymore. I'm like the executive intern at Elena Velas. Like, I,
funny.
You think I get to spend my time drawing and designing and like interfacing with celebrities and going to New York Fashion Week? That's what I show you I'm doing, but that is 10% of like what I'm actually doing. So, business admin.
Yeah, no,
I'm on QuickBooks trying to figure out how to categorize my expenses.
Wait, you're doing that?
Yeah, I'm tired.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I have no team.
You have no team?
No, it's just me.
Wow.
Yeah. Kind of cool. That's kind of funny. It's like, oh, I'm bulletproof because I'm the source of all of this amazing like output.
Yeah. I mean,
and I'm broke.
That's it.
So like, once I get that team, once I get that funding, it's over for these hoes.
Okay. I mean,
drink to that.
I know. I am so interested in how this business works because, first of all, if I were doing my QuickBooks, I'd be audited so freaking fast.
So fast.
How are you not getting audited?
I just...
Are you good at that stuff?
No.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Pure
I'm
luck.
Worried for you right
I'm
now.
I'm worried for me too.
I did my taxes once. I got audited.
Listen, I kind of want to go to jail for a year though.
That'd be bad. I mean, think about what that would do for sales. And then you could get that industrial kind of jail thing in your next line.
I will say that I feel like going to jail for a year would be an extremely formative experience.
Mm.
And not know to it.
And not what?
So if I have to cook my books.
Yeah, you're going
to
go.
To go to jail for one year. Six months.
You're going to white collar jail at that point.
Yeah.
You're like getting the jail.
I'm networking.
Yeah.
I'm networking.
You're like,
you're getting investors.
I'm getting investors. I'm pitching. I'm doing lightning rounds. If you're talented enough to go to jail for tax fraud.
Yeah.
You're talented enough to get out of that.
That's hilarious.
Because then you wouldn't have to worry about the admin too. You'd just be there, like being creative the whole time.
It'd be so nice.
You'd get like
I would read a book. I would read a book, well, and people. I would have health care. I would have child care.
Do they have child care in jail?
Yeah, you are not with your child. Oh. And they are being cared for elsewhere.
By the state.
Right.
Okay, good. Glad we touched
Next
on
question.
Every topic.
5-year plan, go to jail.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. President Biden must fire the head of the Secret Service, Kim Cheadle, if she doesn't resign over the Trump rally shooting last weekend, says House Speaker Mike Johnson.
Director Cheadle has shown the world and said that she has different priorities. She needs to go.
Johnson on ABC's This Week, the Secret Service chief is scheduled to testify on Capitol Hill tomorrow. The FBI has recovered a drone that is believed to have been used by the gunman in the Trump shooting to scope out the site before the rally, says a law enforcement official. A powerful independent who caucuses with Democrats, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, says President Biden should drop out of the race.
It's just time to a new generation to come in that basically can start and let him do the job he intended to do to heal the country.
President Biden's mild COVID symptoms are improving, but he still does have a cough and a hoarse voice, says his doc. Mr. Biden's isolating at home in Delaware. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Brewers win in extra innings. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers playing the Twins in Minnesota before over 41,600 fans, the largest crowd ever for a regular season game at Target Field. Freddie Peralta pitched the first six scoreless innings. Then the Twins scored and it was tied up 1-1 heading into the 11th inning, and things got wild. The Twins scoring three runs into the 12th, the Brewers putting up seven to make it an 8-4 win for Milwaukee, with Jackson Churio in at left fielder for Christian Yelich, who was out with a sore back. Churio making a spectacular diving catch to his left to win the game on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Buxton to left field. Churio is there! And he puts a ribbon on this one. Jackson Churio, three hits out of the nine spot, makes a diving play and puts this one on ice in Minneapolis.
Basketball, the Bucks losing to the Wizards 91-79. Washington outscored the Bucks by 17 in the fourth quarter. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies, light northeast winds with highs in the upper 70s. Tonight, a few clouds around, lows near 60. On Monday, plentiful sunshine, temperatures will be warmer, light southeast winds, and highs will reach the lower 80s. Right now, it's 76.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Earl Ingram.
On the next show, I'll talk to the patriotic millionaires about the need for tax reform in the United States and react to the news from the weekend. It's Motown Monday.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings at 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, if you're just tuning in, this is the Cripescast on Civic Media, and here's my conversation with Milwaukee-born fashion designer Elena Velez. We do merchandise here to a certain degree, or have some clothes are involved in that.
Cool.
There's a lot. Not that I'm trying to, you know, say I'm a fashion designer,
right?
Too,
but you are wearing a Fleet Farm shirt.
Sponsor of the podcast.
Sponsor of the podcast. Yeah,
that's sick.
That was unintentional.
That's sick.
Too.
Fleet Farm sponsors the pod.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a lucky duck.
How do I get on that? How do I get on that tip? I'm trying to like collab with Milwaukee Tool. And I got on a call with them and they were concerned. They
concerned?
Were concerned. No. They were just confused and concerned, as if like I had pointed out like a gas leak smell. Like they just had no, they're like Gen Z fashion brand. I want to turn Milwaukee Tool into the next Carhartt.
Ooh.
100%. They could do it. 100%.
No, 1,000%.
Yeah.
You drive down the highway 94 whatever in this, and you see Milwaukee just right on
easily.
The thing.
Just give me a little deal. Just give me a little 2 mil, like
A casual 2 mil.
Casual 2 mil.
That's a great idea.
It's a really good deal for them.
No, it is.
Are you gonna do it?
I don't think so. I think they're doing really well right now, obviously. I don't think they want to rock the boat by doing like a capsule collection with New York's problematic fave. Like,
are you problematic?
Good. I don't think so. I just don't map cleanly enough onto anyone's political matrix. And that's the point. Like, I'm from the Midwest. I'm trying to bridge like all sorts of different cultures and speak to my own authentic experience.
Mm-hmm.
And some people really get freaked out by that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you
crazy
just
times.
Do you.
You it have is to do you.
It is crazy times, yeah, because people are just, I think if you fully think one side or the other side is right,
you've lost it.
You're fully of
completely.
You know? I don't know. And so many people are like that, but whatever. We digress. But I think that that would be a really cool thing with the Milwaukee deal. But anyway, back to the whole.
Did you know that Karen Davidson opened my show 2 years ago?
Really?
Yeah. Karen Davidson is like the legacy granddaughter of the Harley Davidson empire. She's a down ass bitch.
Mm-hmm.
She is so cool. She came and she opened my fashion show at New York Fashion Week like 2 years ago. She's so cool.
That's badass.
That's another opportunity.
She's so sick.
That's another opportunity.
Yeah.
What are you going to do there?
Yeah. Have you done a
partnership? They already have a creative director who went to all the schools I went to and who's from London. So we're going to keep it cute, but.
Okay.
We'll get in there some. Yeah.
Pick me.
Yeah.
is that is an interesting, yeah. Like, what are the ways to take fashion? You get in, you get like the credibility of Taylor Swift wearing your thing, which I know you're hesitant to say that was more anything more than a fluke, but you get these, you know, articles in the New York Times, Milwaukee mm-hmm. Journal Sentinel, all that. What is sort of like the way to like latch on and get it a money move where it is like a Milwaukee Tool partnership or it mm-hmm. is like a creative director for a brand? Are those the goals, or is the goal for your collection to mm-hmm. be like a store and eventually move into like the Macy's kind of a thing, yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing is, like, in fashion, you can have that hybrid approach. You can do the direct-to-consumer route. You can focus on celebrities and influencers. But you can also go, like, a more institutional route and go into, like, the big retailers, try and appeal to, like, the big, you know, sponsors and collaborators. I've worked with Nike before. I've worked with, like, Dr. Martens, all sorts of, like, really cool, very high-level commercial companies. And it's a little bit of both, like, nobody in the commercial sector wants to see you compromise too much of mm-hmm. what it is that makes you special and makes you unique.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want you to be spicy on the timeline and like posting on Twitter, which I do be doing. So listen.
Oh, that's where you get into trouble. Is it Twitter?
I love to just observe and comment and yeah. be part. That's the thing is fashion is about like digesting and having an opinion on your times.
Yeah.
And really understanding the zeitgeist and finding where you situate yourself within it.
Yeah.
And so how could I not be curious or passionate about culture and about all of these things that are specific to my times, but relegate that just to fashion?
God, yeah. I mean, that's true. I have no interest in reading a thing on Twitter.
That's good.
Or
good for you. That's so healthy.
No, but I would rather snort glass.
Yeah.
I just have no interest.
Yeah.
But I that's not to say that like, but what is it that you, and this isn't like mm-hmm. a, why the hell
yeah.
are you on, but what do you get from?
I guess I'm just, I want to be influenced by the times. I want to be steeped in the discourse of our times, but then mm-hmm. also find the eternal thing in the current thing, as my friend Honor Levy mentioned on her last podcast. Like, how is this plugging into the story of humanity? Like, what is the larger, what can I take out of this to be able to compare it to something that was written 1,000 years ago and 1,000 years in the future that tells me more about the human experience? Like, there are so many universal overarching narratives in culture, politics, what have you, like art, that are cyclical and will continue to be cyclical.
Yeah.
So what is the forever story in the current story? And how can I kind of interpret that to feel now, but to be important to the future?
I get that. I have a concern that...
What's your concern?
The social media is eliminating the human story,
yeah.
period.
Yeah.
Because I think we're becoming more machine-like.
Yeah.
And I think it's intentional because we take these aliens with us everywhere. I'm a big, you know, Kelly's laughing already. But I do think that our communication over these things is taking out the human element to the point where maybe we are heading to a trajectory where humanity is escaping really all scary. Of us.
But that's so, why you need me, because like I'm aware of that. I identify with that.
Yeah.
It makes me a decent interface between being able to see, oh, this is a crazy thing that's happening here. I'm going to dip my toe in and just kind of take the temperature, but also like be able to have the self-awareness that this is crazy.
Yeah.
And that what I want to do with this is productive.
Yeah, no, I, and it's no, whether you, people are doing it or not, it's no, I think there are some people that can do it. Some people that get lost in it.
Totally.
And also it's super controlled by bots.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I think they did a
or
study
like bad
recently.
Faith, shady players who are just unwilling to like either own up to their identity or own up to the source of their funding.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
It's crazy times. You have to have such a level of media literacy to be able to navigate anything in the digital landscape. And I feel so burned by that because there are so many, like I see some of these articles that come out about me that are so fallacious, so erroneous, that just so absurd. Yeah, like people put out all sorts of different like hit pieces or negative like substacks about what I'm up to. And it's just like, really,
why?
I don't know. I think it really is because like, I'm not easy enough to map, to clock, to say, oh, she's this, she's that. She aligns with me. She doesn't align with me. People hate obscurity. People can't handle grayscale.
You lean right in certain areas.
Not even. I'm just, I see problems. I see benefits in all sorts of different ways. And I'm not always conscious about how that influences my work, but it's something I want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I don't prescribe anything with my work. I'm always just asking questions, looking at something, trying to make sense of it. And that really freaks people out.
Hmm. I must have not gone deep enough down the fashion blog space.
Oh,
to
God,
get to
please
the
don't. Yeah. Here's the thing is like last February I did a story. Well, not a story, but I'm hosting salons now. I think that that's a really cool way to bridge and to accumulate all sorts of different interdisciplinary thinkers and makers.
For those who don't know what that means,
yeah.
What does that mean?
I just have like people that are coming to these different events that I'm putting on who are writers, artists, comedians, politicians sometimes, like influencers, people who are from all sorts of different walks of lives creatively,
mm-hmm.
But have just bring kind of a unique quality or understanding to the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that's a really interesting way to start to bring fashion to a new demographic of people that are excited about aesthetics and excited about cultural storytelling, but wouldn't necessarily like overtly identify with fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to do is I want to bring this medium to other people who can poke holes in it and dissect it and add to it and make it stronger. Cause I really do truly believe in like the power and the vision of what American fashion could be. And it's never existed before outside of like a commercial realm.
Yeah. I think that that's really interesting. One mm-hmm. question I have for you, especially since your fashion largely relies on the industrial, what about the manufacturing of your stuff? Where does all that take place? And how much focus do you put on sort of the sustainability of all that sort of stuff?
Yeah. Well, everything's done in the US right now. It's all
that's
made
incredible.
In New York, which is
incredibly expensive.
Insanely expensive. And why nobody can afford it and why I'm struggling right now. Like I could outsource to China, outsource to India, Mexico, mm-hmm. all sorts of different places and have a product at like a unit economic PPU that would make sense to people to be mm-hmm. able to purchase.
Yeah.
But it really is important to me to be able to rehabilitate like American manufacturing. That's something that I'm so excited about. Like all of my friends growing up in high school and early college years were all specialists in like very blue collar trades. They were like welders, machinists, fabricators. They worked in factories. Like they did a lot of welding. Like metal is a huge contribution to what I bring to my fashion message, I guess.
Yeah.
I really want to be able to like recontextualize what's possible for the future of like American artisanal craftsmanship from a fashion perspective.
Well, I think that's incredible. We make a lot of our stuff in the US. Mm-hmm. It was kind of an early thing for me. And it's also the reason that I didn't double down on the merch side of it because the profit margins are slim. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've said to the audience, like, you pay more, but hey, I pay more too, you know? So, but it's tough because so many people will come to my show wearing my shirt, which they clearly just got off of a knockoff thing because as soon as you make something, they knock it off. And then, but the whole point of that is to say that fashion as an industry, you're fighting against the tide by making in the USA because we've shipped all of that stuff overseas.
It's all outsourced.
For decades.
Which is why you have to do it differently. You don't, you can't work hard. You have to work smart.
How do you work smarter?
Galvanize the culture. You bring together all of these disparate resources that make something sexy and cool. And you concentrate those things. Like what I want to do with American manufacturing can't exist as like a faceless factory in some like backwater. Like, no, it's got to be cool. You have to want to relocate to work there.
I see.
You have to build a culture around that. This is a long game. Like this is like something that requires a lot of like vision and a lot of compromise from like a lot of talented people that might not necessarily like identify with the Midwest, but could live a much better life there. It would be much happier living there than working in the garment district in LA or New York.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely room for possibility here.
Earlier, you brought up American Apparel, and I think they had some problems. I forget what the problems were. Just
founder indiscretion. Let's say that.
Okay, founder indiscretion. But for a while, American Apparel was like a made in the USA brand with somewhat of affordable clothes.
Yeah, the hottest influencers you've ever seen. The best branding.
Yeah.
They really like weaponized good branding.
I agree. I do think they also, though, had some issues with workplace.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had, I don't know, something with like the actual workers where I don't think they were either getting paid a living wage or they were
hiring illegal workers. So undocumented workers were working in their factories. They were being paid quite well, actually, but that was the issue, I believe.
And I think that's another thing that like is sort of as a country, we got to decide if we want to do like textiles or whatever. They're very good at that in China as well.
You have like to make it desirable.
Right. I mean, it's not just that like you can make it in the USA, but a lot of times the USA made stuff is just not as good a quality because the workers are not as skilled.
There isn't the infrastructure. People really have to put their money where their mouth is here and really invest in making an operation that is functional, comparable, scalable, and cool. That's the biggest thing. And there's so much room for opportunity to have an operation that seemingly serves one function but can serve a million others.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, like if you're going to do a factory, you could also do like e-commerce photography. You can also be consulting. You can also be doing textile innovation. You can be doing all sorts of different amazing things that all serve the general umbrella of the enterprise, but aren't necessarily like completely contingent upon the success of one thing.
You see the good thing, the thing that you want, let's say that's textile manufacturing in the U.S., sustainable textile manufacturing USA. And that may be your loss leader. And then the other things that you do on the side can help support it until it's a thing that a lot of people are buying and then you get more money in that.
Yeah.
Interesting. And would you say that's maybe the larger dream when you were saying I've done 30% of what I want to do? Is that where you want to go?
Absolutely. Kind of? Yeah. I think that that's where there's so much room for positive impact in so many different really meaningful ways. And the fashion is always like my passion project. Like that's what I get out of it as a creative. That's what I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just so much more room for opportunity to make this something significant to others.
Let's say that somebody listening to this podcast is like, oh, this. Yeah, I like this. Do you like it when people reach out to you?
Of course.
What's the best way to do that?
Email, Instagram. Just find me at info@elenavelez.com. I'm desperate for human resource. I don't even need money. I just need hands.
Yeah.
And brains and people who are willing to donate really niche skill sets, like categorizing your expenses on QuickBooks. Just really dumb things. And like, this is what really exhausts me about going out and trying to locate these people is that like there are so many just non-starters that are just weigh so heavily on your willingness to keep going out and looking for more support.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, I'm just so exhausted with like the mentorship circuit.
Like where you are mentoring or you are being mentored? No,
where I'm seeking support. Yes. For really specific things, because this is really the glass ceiling in the industry that I'm trying to break through is like, okay, you're willing to spend 30 minutes on a Zoom call offering me philosophical support, but I need action items. I need comparables. I need numerical values. I need memes, emails. Like I need like really specific, tangible help.
Mm-hmm.
And when people kind of want to just philosophize, and it's just I don't have time for that, you know.
Yeah.
What do you have? Let's go, let's cook.
Yeah,
let's
right, do it. Right, like what's the biggest thing you're looking for right now to push your thing to the next level?
I need a lot of support business-wise, financially. Like I'm $30,000 in debt, which is like insane to me and debilitating and crippling and spiritually like incapacitating. That's not a lot of money, really. Like, that's not a lot of money.
Well, you read often about Kanye West is $1 billion in debt.
Exactly.
Is that the fashion industry to go hard on debt? And then
you have to be willing to bet on black and bet your life and your soul on it.
God.
And be willing to accept the consequences to be successful in any creative endeavor, I believe.
Yeah. And is it sort of like where you have kind of like merchandise on hand that needs to move? Because I know it's that world,
it's like
too.
It's all sorts of like poor business choices that you make when you're a startup founder and you don't know. Like, you overinvest in inventory. You think you'll be able to make that money up elsewhere. It's all sorts of like little tiny things that like you learn as you go, and nobody is really willing to give you like the action items to tell you don't do this, don't do that. And they can't possibly know because you're doing something totally different. You're appealing to a totally new demographic. So you learn as you go. And like, I've learned an exponential amount over the last couple of years that I can apply.
Right.
I just need to dig myself out of the mess that I made the last 5 years, you know?
Well, it's kind of, if you think about it, people are coming out of school, $100,000 in debt.
Totally.
So, you know, you're, whatever mistakes you're talking about, this is just like your master's, you know?
Yeah.
Did you, this is a thing where I totally had a question. I totally spaced on it. It was a really good question though.
I need business help. I'll wait. You take another sip. I need business help. I need Fashion Week sponsors. Even if like you don't know how the product will make sense in a fashion context, I will make it make sense. I'm an excellent storyteller. I will market this whiskey. I will market this
Brandy, phone. You gotta get that. That's an interesting thing. Though. What do you need for? Okay, this is cool. What do you need for a Fashion Week sponsor? What does it look like?
A Fashion Week sponsor is either offering product or monetary support. I can take small checks, 5 to 15K. You can have front row seats. You can meet all your favorite models. You can
to New York Fashion Week.
Yeah.
I can get front row seats.
You can get front row seats. You can meet all your favorite models. I'll sit you next to Charlie XCX. I'll sit you next to Doja Cat. Who do you like? Let me know.
I want to sit next to Doja Cat.
Do you?
Colleen wants to sit next to Doja Cat.
Yeah. All right. You don't mind.
I feel all right.
You can walk in the show. You can walk in the show.
I can walk in the show?
Wait. You have to.
You should walk in the show.
All right. Guys,
Hannah texted me earlier.
Bye, Brandy.
Okay. Bye, Brandy. Get your mounts to Fashion Week.
Buy Barron's Old Fashioned Brandy. If we get enough money from you buying this, I'm going to walk in New York Fashion Week.
Hell yeah.
Or Colleen's going to sit next to Doja Cat.
Both.
That's cool as hell.
Literally, Hannah texted me and goes, Charlie needs to open the next show.
No, he has to. I'm not joking. I'll do it.
Like, you're walking.
Like you walk
in the show.
How do I model walk?
We can practice.
Let's do it.
Yeah, start over there.
Okay.
yeah, there you go.
I got a whole bottle.
Okay, yeah, take the bottle.
But like casually. Okay.
My models are different though. Like you can't just like walk cute. Like it's gritty, heavy, industrial, nasty, crunchy, feminine. Think about
Do it again.
You are exiting a West Dallas bar. You just got off the back of a Harley Davidson.
Oh, okay.
It's Summerfest.
So
it's,
my ass hurts a little bit.
Right.
That's all the time we have for now. If you want to check out my full conversation with Elena, check out the Cripes Cast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old.
Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning and the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. You're listening to the talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.